Why don't you run for president? Did you ever think about that?
People want me to all the time.
What about you?
I don't like it.
Why?
Can you imagine how controversial I'd be? You think about him with the women. How about me with the women?
So we've been hearing a lot about Harvey Weinstein lately, and what Weinstein has been carrying out has been a bit of an open secret in Hollywood, largely, and to some degree outside of Hollywood. And for the most part, a lot of people have seen this as a Hollywood story, and I think that's a mistake for a very good reason. This kind of thing doesn't just happen on casting couches. This kind of thing just doesn't happen in Orange County. This kind of thing happens all over the world to some degree, but here in America, because we see ourselves as so exceptional, it seems to happen here a lot. And I'll get to those numbers in a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, I do want to welcome you to the fire you can't put out. This is episode number 224. My name is Melvin, and I appreciate so much that you're here.
You know, in one of your tweets that I noticed, you say, Weinstein and Trump are personality proof points that masculinity is in a state of crisis. It's a surprise to see a man say something like this. And when people realize it's you and your name, they're saying, wow. So please explain it to me.
I think that's the issue. The fact that people are surprised to see a man speak up is a ridiculous notion. I think that we all have a responsibility to speak up. And the reality is that's how the tides change.
That's Cooper Hefner appearing on MSNBC with a female anchor. If you recognize his last name, that is because he has a very famous last name, and that is because he has a very famous father. Cooper Hefner is the son of the recently departed Hugh Hefner. And I heard a lot in the media and saw a lot on social media about Hugh Hefner after he died. Oh, Hugh Hefner, you know, he was a champion of gay rights, you know. He was a champion for the ladies, you know. He brought the sex out of these taboo areas, and he brought it into the mainstream, and he made it less taboo, and he really opened our minds sexually. Yeah, okay. I suppose there's some degree of that. I would be lying had I said I never peeped at a Playboy magazine. But I don't think that that's the legacy that Hugh Hefner is going to carry. I think history will look back on him, yeah, as a bit of a trailblazer and to some degree, I guess, a bit of a groundbreaker. But for the most part, I think he's just going to be remembered as a bit of a pig. The guy who just made objects of women and just made a spectacle and a mockery of himself. Even as he aged, you got stories about how he was still banging it out with 20-year-olds and taking Viagra because, well, the tools in the toolbox weren't working quite like they used to. And so my view of Hefner is not all that positive. And when I heard people, and that we have a tendency to do this when people pass, we tend to view them, you know, we tend to almost deify just about anybody when they die. And I mean just about anybody. And it's one of the things that has always annoyed me because death is not the great equalizer. I think people should be remembered in their death for what they did in their life, whatever that was. And I think that that should be a real picture. We shouldn't just be looking for the good things. We should look at them as a whole person. And that's what should be presented upon their passing. Now, Cooper Hefner, being the son of Hugh Hefner, went on MSNBC with this female anchor. And he said, yeah, there's a crisis of masculinity, and there's not a lot of daylight between Weinstein and Trump. And I thought that that was pretty big of him to say, and very unexpected, considering that Hugh Hefner is your father. And one of the things that has happened since the Weinstein story has finally broke, it's not news, it's just now it's public knowledge, as I've heard a lot of outrage from conservatives. Now, I'm talking about the talking heads. I'm talking about conservative leadership. And to some degree, I suppose, the conservative constituency. But I'm trying to lay off them to a large degree because I see them as being misled by conservative leadership more than the fact that they more than seeing them as people that want to be misled. So I'm going to lay into leadership for a little bit. So there's an article by Michelle Goldberg, and we're going to hear from her a few times today at the New York Times. And it says, save the headline, save the phony Weinstein outrage. Republicans, quoting from the article here, Trump is more consistent. He is a pig in public as well as behind closed doors. In 1992, New York Magazine reported that he said the best way to deal with women is to treat them like excrement, although he used a more colorful, vulgar term. He has followed his own advice. His first wife, Ivana Trump, accused him of raping her in a fit of rage. She later denied the events she had recounted were rape in a literal or criminal sense, but stuck to the underlying story. Trump reportedly pressured his second wife, Maria Maples, to pose for Playboy. He owned beauty pageants and, by his own admission, would barge into changing rooms to ogle the naked contestants. The makeup artist, Jill Harth, said he tried to rape her. Multiple women have accused him of groping and sexual harassment. Those charges appear credible in light of the infamous Access Hollywood tape, in which Trump boasted about grabbing women by their genitals. After the truth about his conduct was widely revealed, he was then elected president of the United States. So what we've been hearing from conservative leadership since this story broke, because Weinstein, by some accounts, was progressive. And they go, oh God, you Democrats, here you go again. First it's Clinton, and then it's Weinstein. Really, that's it? Clinton and Weinstein, that's it? Wow. I could rip into the GOP with a list of names right now. So here's what Weinstein and Trump both share. They have both given money to progressive candidates. And in light of this story, progressives decided to abandon him in a big way. And there has been no shortage of people on the left side of the aisle that have spoken out against what Weinstein did. But on the right, you folks decided that it would be a good idea to make this guy president after no shortage of admitting that Trump himself is a sexual predator.
You know, I actually don't think that this is a Hollywood phenomenon. You know, I don't think this is about Harvey Weinstein ultimately. I don't think this is about the film industry ultimately. The abuse of power is a phenomenon we see over and over again in industry after industry. This is about a culture of silence around powerful men. It is about a machine described to me by source after source in this story, designed to silence accusations like this. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about powerful PR teams designed to smear people publicly. I'm talking about a legal team that uses aggressive non-disclosure agreements and settlements, which you talked about in your A block. This is a fusillade of attacks that women face when they speak out, and that's why this is so brave what they've done here.
So that was Ronan Farrow appearing with Rachel Maddow in the last week, and I pulled the Maddow clips because Ronan Farrow was one of the guys who really, really broke this story through. And I'm not going to play the clip, but in that interview, Rachel says to him, you had this, because Ronan Farrow used to work for NBC. She says to him, you had this clip when you used to work for us. Why did you not bring this to us? And he says, I did bring it to NBC, and it was not reportable, according to them. And this goes to the point that he was trying to make about how there are so many people that are willing to keep this kind of a thing secret. What kind of financial stake does NBC have in the Weinstein Company? It'd be interesting to know. But things like this are kept secret when there are a lot of parties involved. It's in the truest sense, this is what a conspiracy is. Real quick, Donald Trump Jr., and by the way, the sins of the father are not the sins of the son, except in this case where that apple does not fall far from the tree. Donald Trump Jr. once said that women who can't handle workplace sexual harassment should maybe go teach kindergarten. Donald Trump Jr. is also one of the guys who has been tweeting incessantly about how Weinstein is a pig.
These sources absolutely ran up against that.
The women who made these allegations faced that while you were reporting on it.
Yes, indeed. And there is a woman quoted in this story who went on camera, on the record, and I describe what she said to me, which was, the legal angle is coming after me. And she withdrew from the piece, and her story is not in there, but that is a woman with a serious allegation.
This is, just to be clear, this is a woman who told you, detailed her allegation about Weinstein to you, was going to be on the record, and withdrew her permission.
On camera, on the record in January, and withdrew.
Because she says the legal angle is coming after me, does that mean the Weinstein companies? Does that mean Weinstein personally?
I will tell you that source after source said they were receiving harassing calls. Some of those are also discussed in this story. These women were afraid, and based on my reporting, legitimately afraid.
Afraid of Weinstein personally, or afraid of other people in his company, afraid of people hired by the company?
Both. On a personal level, they talk about the physical fear born partly of trauma, you know, after an incident like these alleged rapes. You know, the actress Asia Argento, who told a very difficult story of rape, said she forevermore was in his thrall, in a sense, that he had this power to make her feel weak and small. And then also, yes, fear of the machine, fear for their careers and their livelihoods. These are women who at times were very enmeshed with Mr. Weinstein and his business.
Including, and not just threats and fear at the time that it happened in terms of the intimidation, but threats now. While they're coming up.
Ongoing, and I talk in the story about sources receiving multiple calls from him, trying to determine who talked to me, when they talked to me, trying to shut them up. These women came forward with incredibly brave allegations. They tore their guts out talking about this and re-traumatized themselves because they believed they could protect other women going forward. So this should not be a story about me or the wonderful work that Jodi Kantor did, important work, but ultimately we are there in service of women doing something really tough, and I hope people hear their voices and focus on that.
From Hollywood to politics, specifically Rhode Island politics, there is an article over at the Providence Journal, the headline, Lawmaker on Sex and Politics. It's about a culture. You will hear folks of my persuasion, progressives and feminists, pointing out what we refer to as a rape culture. And there's a lot of folks on the conservative side of the aisle that will hear that phrase and go, ugh, God, you guys are so whiny. These snowflakes need a safe place. My God, it's a real thing, and it's almost always men that are pointing out that, nah, it's not a problem. Nah, that's not a thing. And is it that men don't see it, or is it that men are the beneficiaries of this culture, and that's why they, by and large, remain silent? Quoting here from the Providence Journal article, during her two decades in the House, State Representative Edith Aiello says she's heard too many stories of sexual harassment of female lawmakers, staffers, and lobbyists to be surprised by the recent allegations by Representative Teresa Tanzi. In an interview with the Providence Journal, Tanzi, Democrat from South Kingston, said, as a state representative, I have been told sexual favors will allow my bills to go further. She said the harasser was not someone who was my equal. It was always someone who had a higher ranking position. Aiello, who was first elected to the Assembly in 1992, said other women who are lawmakers and lobbyists have told her that they were asked for sexual favors in exchange for help moving their legislation. You'd like to help your constituents? Well, how's about you and me make a deal, honey? But that's not always part of the harassment, she said. It's absolutely not just one person, she said. It really is about a culture. You can't think of it, you take one person out of the mix and the story's over. It's more than that. Just one-third of state lawmakers are women in the General Assembly. Women occupy 11 of 38 seats in the Senate and 23 out of 75 in the House. This is in Rhode Island. Some describe a patriarchal, male-dominated legislature where women are routinely spoken over, discounted or dismissed during birth, both public and private meetings. It's an environment where Gail Golden, a state senator since 2013, is routinely told that she needs to smile more, and she's chastised for asking too many questions during a hearing. Aiello, who was first elected in 92, said she's sad and frustrated that she and other women are still battling for legitimacy and an equal standing among their colleagues. Golden, a Democrat from Provence, says she is sick of seeing her bills about equal pay and women's reproductive health being labeled as women's issues and sidelined for others, for other initiatives. Tansy came forward during a social media movement where women were asked to tweet or post Me Too to expose the volume of people who have been sexually assaulted or harassed. And what do all of these stories have in common? Whether it's Bill Cosby, whether it's Weinstein, whether it's the president of the freaking United States. And by the way, Fox News and right-wing radio has had no shortage of round-the-clock Clinton coverage about how Clinton, Bill Clinton, is a rapist, and Hillary Clinton is an enabler, and she's silencing the women, and how dare she? These are her, this is her gender. Funny, when it was the Clintons, it was one story. And now that it's the Republican president, it's a whole nother story. And that's because the Republicans know that they might get their gigantic tax cuts through for themselves and for their constituents. And by constituents, I mean gigantic donors. But all of these men, Cosby, Weinstein, Trump, all of them, while they held these very powerful positions, and women were less likely to come forward because the backlash was so bad. And one of the things that Ronan points out in this next clip I'm going to play for you is only once Weinstein had come down a couple of pegs did women feel like they could finally tell their story.
Of these 16 executives and assistants who talked to me, over and over again, I heard from them, we feel a profound sense of guilt about what we saw and our silence about it for years.
People inside the company
people
who knew about it, who heard
company.
About it, who witnessed it.
A female employee who said she was asked to serve as, she used the term, a honeypot in meetings, meaning she would be present to reassure some of these young women who were being brought in that this was professional and then would be asked to leave the hotel room or other room. And look, I talked to multiple employees who said we saw fear in these women's eyes. Mm-hmm. And that is something that haunted a lot of these people. None of them quit as a result. I think that haunted them too. And, you know, even still to this day, some of them spoke only anonymously. So
what happens though?
Issue.
What happens though when you've been haunted by something for 10, 12, 15, 17, 20 years, and then all of a sudden the haunting becomes too much and you all decide to talk? I mean,
they also spoke to a changing culture that after the revelations about Ailes and Cosby and these powerful men, they felt that the grip on power of these individuals is slipping, and they felt that there was an atmosphere in which they could finally speak. Now, look, that's not all noble. They also said Harvey Weinstein specifically is less powerful now. We fear retaliation less because he is no longer, in the words of one source, the fourth most powerful person in Hollywood. He is now the, 200th most powerful person.
That's fascinating.
So there was a pragmatic change here, too. And you see it again and again with these other men, too. You know, these stories come out when they are less powerful.
Honeypot. This was a new term for me when doing research for this show. Because when you talk about conspiracies, now obviously this particular practice benefits men, very, very gross men, but it benefits men. But men are only roughly half of the population. In order for this kind of a thing to really work, it needs some women. It needs some women enablers. The thing that the conservatives over at Fox News, a lot of whom who have had to resign recently because of their sexual harassment of women. And of course, just go ahead and Google leg cam and Fox News, and you'll find out the gross environment that exists over at that male-centric channel. But there are no shortage of women who are willing to vote for, who are willing to co-sign, who are willing to back this kind of behavior. I'm looking to the 53% of women, or 56%, somewhere in there, majority of white women who voted for Donald Trump after he admitted to sexually assaulting women on tape. And there were a bunch of women that came out and accused him of it too. I talk about Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter's one of the first people that got behind Donald Trump in a big way. And it's no secret the horrible, horrible things that he has done with women, she being a woman herself, allegedly. And then there's Betsy DeVos. I'm sure most people just see Betsy as poisonous and awful to our nation's school system. And make no mistake about it, she is. But one of the more recent consequential things that she did was she changed the way that the government investigates sexual assault on campuses. Now, I'm going to try to keep this as simple as possible. During the Obama era, they decided to change the way they investigate these things to something referred to as the preponderance of evidence. Now, as I've talked about, and you've heard in some of these clips, so many of these women are so afraid to come forward, whether it's they're just afraid in general, they're afraid of going up against powerful men, they're afraid of retaliation, they're afraid of the circles of people that are around these abusers that are willing to stand up for them. So the Obama administration changed it to the preponderance of evidence. If you come forward and you say something, and we know how hard that is, we're going to assume that there is some degree of truth to it, and we're going to investigate it. Betsy DeVos, a woman herself, decided to change it to what we refer to as clear and convincing evidence. And with that standard, this could put women face to face with their accusers, where it's their word against hers. And when you have to face your accuser, you're traumatized, you're abused again and again and again. And since the heavy burden of proof is put on you, if you're not filming yourself all the time, if you do not catch your own rape or assault on camera, it's a lot less likely that anything is going to happen to the person that you accuse. And Betsy DeVos has enabled this. She has been not quiet about standing up. She says too many men are being accused by these lying women. I'm paraphrasing here. I'm not quoting. She says they all go to college. They all get drunk. They all do stupid things. And then the women get to lie about the men and ruin their lives. Betsy DeVos is a woman, allegedly.
Tell me what you think a Trump presidency would look like.
Classy.
I'm very highly educated. I know words. I have the best words.
Although Trump won with a very small margin, and that is the Electoral College, the system that we put in place to help the slave states during Reconstruction. He lost by 3 million votes, but it doesn't matter because he's the president. But it's a very razor-thin margin he really won by, even though he lost by 3 million votes. And Betsy DeVos, of course, she became education secretary on the same kind of thin line. It was 50-50 in the Senate. And Mike Pence, an awful human being, he had to come in as vice president and break the tie. So it was 51-50. And everybody saw that. A president that nobody wanted. An administration that nobody wanted. And then an education secretary that nobody really wanted. And Betsy DeVos has faced opposition everywhere she goes. And it's not new. It's been there from the very beginning.
Senate office phone lines have been shut down over the past week with so many callers weighing in against Betsy DeVos. Every office is receiving tens of thousands of letters asking the Senate to reject her. Almost 40,000 have come into my office alone.
There are 1 million people who live in Montana. Over 3,000 people have contacted me opposing her. I've had 20 contact me that support her. The phones are ringing off hook. In fact, the phones are ringing to the tune of 1,200 to 1,500 calls a day. The phone system has shut down. There are some senators who aren't even answering their phone because they don't want to hear it.
I've never seen folks in Connecticut respond to a nominee like they did after that hearing. Since the hearing, I've had 11,000 people from my tiny little state call or write me to oppose her nomination. Almost no one has called to support the nomination. That's extraordinary.
It's not just the president and the people that he picks to be a part of his cabinet. The culture that we have with respect towards our women has been what it is for a long time, several decades now. Rush Limbaugh gained prominence during the late 80s. And one of the things that his listeners, which are largely male, he's got some ladies, but by and large, they're male. One of the things that his listeners really like about him is how much he clearly hates women. He's even very famous for using the phrase feminazi. Now, dig this. You think, now, if you're a feminist, and I am, you believe that women should have rights equal to that of men. I believe they should be greater, but let's just go with the whole equal thing. Equal to that of men. We have very important jobs as both men and women, and we have to work together to get things done. And when you're making a baby, you definitely got to work together. Now, men tend to have this idea that, well, she's pregnant, it's up to her to deal with, not mine, or well, I'm not going to deal with it, or whatever. Men get to knock up women and walk away. So a lot of dudes have this attitude. You know, it's their problem, it's their thing. And constantly inside the halls of Congress, we're just hammering away at birth control. Republicans are talking about just getting rid of more forms of birth control right now, trying to fight birth control in the state houses and in D.C. Birth control. Why? Well, for control of women's bodies. And they're also, and abortion. Oh my God, everyone, what's your opinion on abortion? Who cares? Unless, of course, you yourself are going to have to make that tough decision about having an abortion. You, and even then, you do not get to tell other people what they're going to do with their bodies with respect to that. But once again, it's got nothing to do with contraception. It's got nothing to do with abortion. It's about controlling women's bodies. Because you control women's bodies, there's a lot of things that you control in society. And I think women, for the most part, realize that they have that power. But they've got dudes like Limbaugh leading all the dumb, knuckle-dragging males around society and telling them about what these women are really like.
I have a theory, folks. I think one of the reasons that real women, and let me define real woman. I'm talking about the non-feminist, the non-victim feeling, just a woman happy with herself, happy being with a woman, wants to be in a relationship. Just, you know, what we've always thought of women, not activists, not angry. Not, I mean, look, you know what I mean. I mean,
No.
Not left-wing activist, feminazi type women. You know the type of women I'm talking about, don't you?
I think he realized he stepped in a gigantic pile of Rush Limbaugh. And there he is at the end of that audio clip, just scraping the Rush Limbaugh off of his shoe. You know what I'm talking about, the real women that aren't leftist. I don't think being on the left side of the political spectrum or the right side of the political spectrum makes you a real woman or less of a woman. I think you can be a conservative woman. I think you can be a progressive woman. But here's the difference. If you are a conservative woman, and you are willing to be a part of this thing, this game that the conservatives play, where it's all about controlling women's bodies. It's all about telling women what to do. It's all about telling them their place in society. Now, if you're one of those women that's okay with dudes oppressing women, okay, I'm sorry, you got to get back your lady card. You can't do that. Now, if you're a conservative woman and you say, well, I just believe that the government should be small, fine, tell me all about that. I'm ready to hear it. I think the taxes should be low. I think there should be less regulation. Okay, fine. You sound like a Wall Street banker, but you know what? I'm going to listen to you because you're a conservative and I'd really like to hear from you. But if you go, ugh, women shouldn't get to have this, that, and the other that has to do with their bodies. Whoa, whoa, whoa. No, no, no. Easy there, small government. You don't get to do that.
I don't think Ivanka would do that inside the magazine, although she does have a very nice figure. I've said that if Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her.
One of the things about Ivanka was that I heard a lot of progressives express high hopes for Ivanka. Ivanka is progressive-minded. Ivanka's got these progressive views on women's issues. Perhaps she can be of some assistance to her dad in helping shape policy, especially considering that her own dad wants to have sex with her. And that has not been the case. In a recent interview, she was asked, Ivanka, you've expressed these somewhat progressive views on women's issues. Why? I mean, are you not talking to your dad? Are you not talking to the president? Are you not telling him what? I mean, he seems to only be listening to Mike Pence on women's issues. And Mike Pence, I'm not sure if you noticed, he's not a woman. So, Ivanka, are you not? And she goes, I'm using my energy in other ways. And I talk with my father, but it's up to him. I'm paraphrasing here. I talk to my father, but it's clearly up to him what he does.
My administration will follow two simple rules. Buy American and hire American.
And I said, okay, now she sounds like a politician. Golly, what can it be? What's really behind that? Because I have heard her express in the past before her dad became a politician, became president. I have heard her express those progressive viewpoints. But what would make her all of a sudden not express those? And obviously, if your dad wants to have sex with you, and I know how gross that is, but I'm going to keep saying it because he's a pig. If your dad wants to have sex with you, man, you've got some sway. So why don't you help us out, Miss Ivanka? And just like whenever I have just this conversation I have with my dad recently, he goes, we're going to get a middle-class tax cut. And I go, Dad, follow the money. And with respect to this, I did the same thing. And I go, I bet if I follow the money, I'll find out why she doesn't seem all that interested in helping women out.
Her woven blouses, her shoes, and her handbags is a very popular part of the stuff she made. She sells made in China. All right, let's take a look at the dresses and knit tops. Made in Indonesia. How about the suit jackets that you buy with the Ivanka brand? Made in Vietnam. And the cotton tops that she sells are made in India. We're not done yet. The denim pants are made in Bangladesh. The shoes, these are shoes that were not made in China. They are made in Ethiopia. This is very creative because all of these places are remarkably low labor cost countries. Now, we know that companies do this and people have a view about it. A lot of Americans like to buy things really cheaply. There's a massive percentage of the stuff we all buy is made overseas. But if your whole shtick is that making things overseas robs Americans of jobs, particularly when it comes to manufacturing, how about you don't lecture the company? How about you don't tweet Ford and you don't tweet Carrier? How about you tweet your daughter, Ivanka Trump, for starters?
Ali Velshi, it's not just about shtick, it's about business practices. The answer is zero. Ivanka Trump doesn't make any of her products here. And what's extraordinary about this is Workforce Development Group was a leading initiative for Ivanka Trump. So the question, when are you going to start eating your own cooking? We turn it back to the Trump family. Ivanka Trump's entire business is making and selling clothes, none of which are being made here. So let's bring in.
You don't need to hear it from us. Let's actually hear it from Ivanka and Donald Trump.
My administration will follow two simple rules. Buy American and hire American.
I do label myself a feminist, and I think of that in very broad terms. I think of that as believing in the social, political, and economic equality.
From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first.
Since becoming president, Donald Trump still does not make his stuff here. Since becoming president, Donald Trump still applies to the Department of Labor so that he can bring in foreign labor. So he's not following his own words. And another one of his children, not falling that far from the tree. It became pretty clear to me pretty quickly after really thinking about it. If she begins expressing to her dad those feminist viewpoints, those progressive viewpoints, well, she might get a little bit of backlash. She's got all this crap that's got her name on it, that's made in other countries, that's made by slaves. And I'm sure at least half of those slaves are women. No, not that their plight is any worse than the men. A slave is a slave. But it's pretty clear that when it comes to her, this is just another woman that is absolutely willing to sell out other women, if there's a buck in it for her.
Donald, do you ever discuss sex with your daughter?
No.
You do not?
No.
You've never sat down?
I have a feeling we're not going to hear.
And another embarrassing video from a 2006 Howard Stern show has surfaced. It shows Trump alongside daughter Ivanka and son Don Jr. joking about being a sexual predator.
You know about sexual predators and things like that. I mean,
you are one.
All right. I was going to say that. But it's true.
It doesn't play out all that well on the radio, so let me tell you what happened there. When Robin called him a sexual predator, Trump nodded his head, yes, smiled, you know, cocked his head to the side. Yeah, that's me, sexual predator. And then, of course, you heard Howard Stern there say, yeah, it's true. And everybody had a good laugh because, you know, sexual predators are effing hilarious.
Pretty much all of the women, the reason they like Trump is the same reason the media hate the guy. And that is he's not PC whipped. He's not politically correct whipped. He stands up for himself. He's not ashamed of himself. He's not afraid. And he stands up and defends the women who work for him and the women who are close to him. He's so different. He's so unbound. He's so unpredictable. He's so male.
There's a complaint coming out of conservative circles right now, and I cannot overstate this. And conservative men are complaining, well, they're complaining that they are having trouble dating women because women do not like genuinely conservative thought. Let me say that again. They cannot get a date. They cannot find a lady because women do not like genuinely conservative thought. This is insane. And I want to address this. So there's Limbaugh going, he's so clearly Limbaugh is quite attracted to him. Perhaps instead of pursuing his daughter, he could pursue Limbaugh. Don't think about that. You're going to throw up. So here's Limbaugh. He is so male. He is so strong. He is not PC whipped. He is, and this is why the ladies love him. If the ladies love him so much, then why are women being repelled as soon as they find out that a man voted for Donald Trump or supports Donald Trump? How come these conservative men are having so much trouble dating? There was an article that was written recently by Jared Labor over at The Federalist. And the headline is, your refusal to date conservatives is one reason why we have Donald Trump. Erin Gloria Ryan over at the Daily Beast decided to address his particular article and pointed out, since Trump, quoting here, was elected, there's been a smattering of these, blame the current state of the world on a similar failure of female responsibility. See, ladies, you're not dating them, and Trump is president, and now it's all your fault, ladies. The New York Times ran something a few months back about the difficulty blue state Trump voters have with dating, and it was roundly mocked. And I went on television to mock it, as did many other people. This is the author here. So Jared Labor's article over at The Federalist, your refusal to date conservatives is one reason that we have Donald Trump. My God, ladies, if you just give it up, there'd be no Donald Trump. Quoting here, I don't know a single liberal woman who voluntarily reads The Federalist. So the your, air quotes here, construction of the headline is a little confusing. It seems that this piece was written for the sort of aggrieved, dateless, Trump-voting man who wanted to share it on Facebook in the hopes that the similarly aggrieved would share it as well. Eventually, the hope is that one of these liberal women at the whom the you is aimed will see it, feel deep, penetrating shame. Maybe date these men or something? I don't know. The argument itself is similarly confusing. Labor's point is that America is more divided than ever, and that the division that enabled Donald Trump to win, that tribalism has led to people refusing to date the people who disagree with them. And online dating sites are enabling political tribalism by letting women specify whether or not they like Planned Parenthood, which Labor equates to liking abortion. Labor cites in his article Charles Murray. You should know that name, and if you do not, let me enlighten you a little. Charles Murray, one of the researchers behind the bell curve, which argued that there are inherent racial differences in intelligence. That's what he cited in his article. She points out here, as a left-leaning woman, I've read a lot about how my type are, and she means progressive women, about how my type are fat, unattractive lesbian sluts who are, despite their lesbianism and unattractiveness to men, are frequently getting pregnant via having sex with men and then having abortions, of course, on demand. I've even seen articles to this end published on The Federalist. If we're so terrible, conservative men, why do you want to date us? Let me answer that question for you. Maybe the reason women won't date you is because you're awful. Maybe if you back these conservative policies that put women on the receiving end of not just abuse and violence, both sexual and verbal and physical, perhaps if you weren't supporting those kind of men, maybe if you weren't a horrible human being, women would be interested in dating you. Women refusing to date Trump-supporting men isn't what caused men to react and turn to Trump for solace. That women won't date is a symptom of their awfulness. Like voting for Trump is, among certain populations, a symptom of a specific sort of awfulness. Heterosexual women might be turned off by a man's politics, by their philosophy, by their musical taste, by their affinity for talking about gadgets, the most boring thing in the world to talk about. But if the man in question is a nice enough person, if he takes care of himself and treats others with genuine respect, somebody will probably date him, maybe even a progressive. The world is full of lonely people who will let things slide in the name of companionship. If nobody likes you, the problem is you. Maybe you could make yourself great again, and then you'll get a girlfriend.
Women voters nationwide actually prefer both cockroaches and hemorrhoids to Donald Trump.
That was part of a larger poll that came out before the election. And it seems that not a lot has changed during that period.
Kate Winslet, who won Best Actress in 2009, is revealing that she deliberately did not thank Harvey Weinstein in her acceptance speech, despite thanking 19 others by name.
I'd like to thank some of the people along the way who had faith in me.
He was bullying and nasty, very hard to deal with. The fact that I'm never going to have to deal with Harvey Weinstein again is the best thing that ever happened. Actress Alyssa Milano is appealing to women everywhere to come forward with their stories under the hashtag MeToo. If you've been sexually harassed or assaulted, write MeToo, the actress tweeted. Thousands are responding, including MeToos from Lady Gaga, Deborah Messing, and Rosario Dawson.
I woke up a few mornings ago. And social media is not the first thing I do in the morning. There's any number of things. But I do jump online to find my news. I don't subscribe to a local newspaper, although I should. My apologies to my local newspaper. But as soon as I got online, and I didn't have to hit too many buttons. I really just had to turn the phone on. And this hashtag about Me Too was just exploding all over the place. Now, wait a minute. I thought we didn't have a rape culture. I thought we didn't have a problem with so. But there's all these stories going around all over the place. Now, you and I, the regular folks, the simpletons, we can add to those numbers, certainly. But it's when the big stars, Alyssa Milano, Lady Gaga, some of the politicians, some of the lady politicians that tweeted it as well. Only at that time do we really get a picture of how many people have really gone through this. And I myself, I was molested as a child. So let's see, I turned 39 this week. It was 37 years ago that I was molested. Oh yeah, yeah. I was very, very young when it happened to me. I did not tweet out Me Too because although some of us are okay with putting that out there, and I suppose I just did here, I didn't want to go online because I just felt like I'm going to get people writing to me. And oh my God, Melvin, what happened? You know, tell us. I don't want to talk about it. Man, I talk with my freaking therapist about it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. But this kind of stuff should not be happening. And similar to the ladies, and of course I'm a man, when I told my mom that it was happening, I was like 2 or 3 years old. When I told my mom it was happening, she ignored it. She dismissed me. She turned me away, sent me right back to the accuser after I had told her what happened. And I didn't tell her in this, oh, Mom, this terrible thing happened to me. I go, Mom, that dude that, you know, is your friend was doing this thing to me. And oh, just da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I was just immediately dismissed. And it wasn't until a few years later, when I told someone else about it, that they went, bloody hell, what? What happened? Oh my God, does your mom? Yeah, she does know. She doesn't seem to care. So I know the pain all too well. So an article over at Fortune.com, the headline says, a new poll on sexual harassment suggests why Me Too went so insanely viral. It found that more than half of Americans, quoting here, half of all American women, 54%, have experienced unwanted or inappropriate sexual advances at some point in their lives. 30% of women who have endured such behavior from male colleagues and 25% identified men with sway over their careers as the culprits. There's that whole power thing. The poll found that all told, 33 million U.S. women have been sexually harassed and 14 million sexually abused in work-related episodes. Yet nearly all women, 95%, report that male perpetrators of such abuse usually go unpunished. The poll did provide some promising results. 75% of Americans call the workplace sexual harassment a problem, and 64% deem it a serious problem. So people recognize that it's there, although we're not necessarily all that willing to do anything about it. And the rape culture that I was speaking about, quoting here from the New York Daily News, Swedish model getting rape threats, get that, rape threats for posing for an Adidas ad with hairy legs. A Swedish artist and photographer claims she's gotten rape threats because she modeled in an Adidas advertisement with hairy legs. Arvida Bystrom, who was featured in a campaign for the sportswear giant's original Superstar Bold platform sneaker that launched this month, on Instagram, Adidas Originals hailed Bystrom for being bold. She's in her mid-20s. The artist's work could push buttons, and the company noted questions femininity and gender standards using so-called girly aesthetics. Now, Bystrom has 197,000 Instagram followers, and she practices what she preaches. She doesn't shave her legs, which is clear from the photo and where she wears a short, lacy frock and the sneakers. Since the ad started running, it has drawn a lot of critical comments, she said. Bystrom said she has been personally threatened for the shoot. Now, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. Now, she's gotten some positive comments. But there are dudes going, I'm going to, or I would like to rape you, because how dare you challenge my ideas of what feminism is, what femininity is, about the way that a woman, how dare you challenge me? You can say, Melvin, this is all, it's all really terrible, but none of us is really holding any of these people up, you know, these abusers up. As great men, as great and wonderful men. My God, Melvin, it's not as though one of them is. Oh, wait a minute. One of them is.
The first of eight accusers publicly came forward Wednesday night of this week. Mindy McGillivray was one of them. For her, it was the presidential debate in St. Louis that prompted her to speak out. McGillivray couldn't believe what she had just heard.
We hear Anderson Cooper ask him, like, a number of times, you know, is this something that you did? Did you grope women? Did you kiss them? And he just adamantly says no. I jumped off of my couch, and I was like, you're a liar.
That's my answer.
Summer Zervos once appeared as a contestant on Trump's reality show, The Apprentice. After she was kicked off the show, Zervos was in talks with Trump about working for his company. He asked to meet her at the Beverly Hills Hotel.
He came to me and started kissing me open-mouthed as he was pulling me towards him. I tried to push him away. I pushed his chest to put space between us, and I said, come on, man, get real. He repeated my words back to me, get real, as he began thrusting his genitals.
I was very young.
In the early 1990s, Kristen Anderson was an aspiring model in New York. According to the Washington Post, Anderson had never met or seen Donald Trump in person until he sat down next to her one night in a Manhattan dance club.
The person on my right, who unbeknownst to me at that time was Donald Trump, put their hand up my skirt.
Temple Taggart is a former Miss Utah. She says without her consent, Trump kissed her on the lips immediately after meeting her in 1997. Rachel Crooks told the New York Times that Trump kissed her inappropriately as well in 2005. Natasha Stoyanov, a writer for People magazine, says Trump forcibly kissed her and pinned her down while on a reporting assignment at Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. And Jessica Leeds says Trump grabbed her breasts and put his hands up her skirt on a plane in the early 1980s. Donald Trump, again Friday, denied all of the allegations against him and described it all as a political smear campaign.
I don't know who these people are. I look on television. I think it's a disgusting thing.
which is exactly how Mindy McGillivray says Trump treated her one night backstage after a Ray Charles concert at the Mar-a-Lago estate. McGillivray was there with a friend waiting to get her picture taken with the singer when she says Trump grabbed her from behind.
And he didn't give me a second glance. He knew what he did. I know he knew what he did. I can tell by looking at his smug face, he knew exactly what he did. I told Ken, I was like, Donald just grabbed my ass. And he was like, what do you want to do about it? I was like, I was silent, you know, I don't want to do anything.
She says she regrets not confronting the billionaire right on the spot. And despite Trump's insistence that he treats women with respect, all of the women who've come forward say Trump treated them like objects that he could have his way with.
What would you tell Donald Trump today?
You're a sick, sick person. And if you don't acknowledge it, then maybe he's just an helpless old man who needs to step down.
And now that he's president, it's very unlikely that any of these women are going to get any degree of justice. And the women who appeared in that piece have suffered merciless attacks, not just from Trump, not just from Trump's lawyers, not just from Trump backers, but also Trump voters and Trump supporters. Because how dare they? How dare they point out the things that he really did? The horrible, horrible, awful things that he really did. And then we have an entire country full of honeypots and a whole lot of sexual violence, sexual harassment that will all simply be ignored, dismissed, and go unanswered. The headline over at Huffington Post by Alana Vagianos, this is what an epidemic looks like. 30 alarming statistics to show the reality of sexual violence in America. 17.7 million is the estimated number of women who have been victims of rape just since 1998. 99, the percentage of perpetrators of sexual violence that will walk free, 99%. 13, the percentage of rape survivors who will attempt suicide. 64, the percentage of trans people who will experience sexual assault in their lifetimes. 127 billion, the total amount of money that rape costs victims every year in the U.S., excluding child sexual abuse. 16 to 19, the age range of women that are four times more likely than the general population to be victims of rape, attempted rape, or sexual assault. Female college students ages 18 to 24 are three times more likely than women in general in the general population to experience sexual violence. And now they have less of a way to get any sort of help. One in six, the fraction of American women who have survived an attempted or completed rape in their lifetimes. 1.8, the amount of times trans people or people of color are more likely to experience sexual violence than the general population. 3, the percentage of men who will be raped in their lifetime. 90, the percentage of adult rape victims that are female. 321,500, the average number of victims of rape and sexual assault per year in the United States. 80,600, the estimated number of inmates who experience sexual violence in prison or jail every year. 60, the percentage of instances of sexual violence experienced by inmates that are perpetrated by jail or prison staff. 2, the number of times a person with a disability is more likely to be a victim of sexual assault or rape than a person without a disability. 241,600, the estimated lifetime income that a survivor of sexual violence who was abused as an adolescent will lose. $400 to $1,500, that's the amount of money it costs to get a rape kit tested, according to the Violence Against Women Act. A survivor should never have to pay for their own rape kit, but many states have loopholes that force survivors to do just that. 12 to 34, the age range in which people are most likely to be sexually assaulted. 21, the average number of transgender nonconforming students who report being sexually assaulted while attending college. 46, the percentage of bisexual women who report being raped in their lifetime. 18,900, the number of military service people who experienced unwanted sexual contact in 2014. 1 in 7, the fraction of military service members who experienced an assault at the hands of someone in their chain of command. 5,900, the Average number of Native Americans 12 years and under who report being sexually assaulted every year. 94, the percentage of women who experience symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, in the 2 weeks after being raped. 7 in 10, the fraction of rapes committed by someone the victim knows. 57%, the percentage of sexual violence perpetrators that are white. 93%, the percentage of child sexual abuse perpetrators who know their victim. 93%. 2 to 10. That's the percentage of false rape reports. $750 billion, the amount of money sexual violence and abuse costs in the U.S. in 2008 alone.
I support gender equality. I think men and women are equal and should be treated as such. Which is why, if a woman ever hits a man, she should be treated as if she was equal to men.
You know, I always found it to be a funny contradiction when feminists complain about how evil gender inequality is, yet rely on gender inequality to excuse some women from their destructive behavior. Because last I checked, if a man initiated physical violence by slapping me on the face, I would be justified in punching him. In fact, it wouldn't matter what gender was involved. Any person who starts a fight by physically assaulting someone deserves a good punch in the face, whether they're a man or a woman. Because you see, I believe in gender equality.
So when I say equality, I'm talking about all kinds of positive things, all kinds of things that have to do with rights. But then this gentleman, who obviously doesn't represent all conservatives, but this is the end that it gets taken to whenever we talk about these issues. Oh, you want to be equal? So if you get in a fight with a man, you must want to be punched. And it's not funny. This is the way this kind of thing gets handled.
There's still men in this room, probably, who think that women should never be in charge of anything. Especially politically. I get trapped in this guy conversation all the time. And it's always the same dumb dude argument. It's just the guy going, you can't have a woman in charge because, you know, periods. That's the whole argument. You can't have a woman in charge because she's going to go on her period. She's going to go crazy. She's going to kill us all. You go, I guess that's an argument. Because, I mean, women do go crazy, but no crazier than men go. I mean, like, I trust a woman on her period way more than I trust a man with an erection.
Credits to Peter White for that clip. So, and I took the entire hour. I focused on no other issues because this particular issue is huge to me. And so what would I like to see come out of this? Well, first and foremost, I would like to say that I want folks to recognize that this kind of thing happens. I don't want us to be dismissive of anybody, especially women, when they say that this kind of thing has happened to them. And don't make gross comments to the ladies, because it's not okay. If it makes them uncomfortable, it's not okay. When we talk about equal rights, we mean equal. We don't mean punching women. We mean equal. If you are the father of sons, teach your sons that level of respect and teach them to say something if they see something. I was not brought up with those good values, but I learned those values, and I myself am the father of daughters, and I am worried about sending them out into the world, considering how welcoming the world seems to be if you are a sexual predator. And then, of course, the number of honeypots that appear to be out there. So if you are it's not just this country. If you are in any country and you are of any gender, and you hear of this kind of thing happening, say something. Teach your children that this kind of thing is not okay. Teach your children that, yeah, there are every so often some false reports, but the vast majority of reports of rape or sexual assault or sexual harassment are real and need to be addressed and cannot simply be dismissed. Because what this does is this creates a lot of victims who are afraid to come forward, afraid of the backlash, afraid of the interruptions that are going to happen in their life because they decided to speak out against some pig. And that's what it is. If you're a man, I don't understand how you carry this kind of awful crime out. I don't understand how you do that and still look at yourself in the mirror. But there's no shortage of them that are willing to do it. By my count, according to the last election, men and women, 59 million of them who are absolutely okay with every square inch of this because they decided to make a sexual predator our president. But we're stuck with him now. Don't tell women what they should be. Do not tell them how to act. And I shouldn't have to tell you this, but God dang it, no means no. And it couldn't be any simpler than that. I shouldn't have to say these things. I shouldn't have to say it into a microphone. I shouldn't have to say it out loud. And the fact that I am is an effing shame. I've done quite a few shows about this particular issue, and I revisit it a couple of times a year. And I will continue to revisit it until it is no longer an epidemic. But as long as it is, I'm going to keep getting on this microphone, and I'm going to keep hammering away at it. It's because I want change. You should want the same change too. And it doesn't make you a Nazi if you want that change. It makes you a human being, an empathetic, compassionate human being. And at the risk of sounding corny, love really is the answer. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire. You can't put out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also find us on Podbean. You never want to miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I have woken you up, good morning.